Environmental Health Trust et al. Versus the FCC. What does it mean for kids in schools? Just to summarize the case, it was the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, which ruled that the decision by the U.S. Federal Communications Commission in 2019 to retain, keep, without updating its 1996 wireless radiation safety limits for human exposure to wireless radiation, the court deemed that as arbitrary and capricious, their decision to keep those limits. And they also pointed out that, especially in regarding children and children in schools, that the FCC had ignored research showing damage to memory and reproduction, ignored research showing children are more vulnerable to wireless radiation, and they did not address all the harms from long-term exposure in their decision to keep those limits. And when they ignored that science, they didn't explain why, or they didn't even mention it at all, which is why we decided to file a lawsuit against them. One of the things you might hear is that, well, you know, the levels of Wi-Fi radiation in school, it's safe. There's no problem with that. So what this court decision means is that it's no longer accurate to say the level of radiation in schools is safe for school children. And that's because the court ruling showed that the FCC was unable to show that those 1996 wireless radiation limits were based on a full review of all the science, specifically those impacts to brain memory and reproduction, so important for children whose brains and bodies are still developing. So safety cannot be assured if there's been no full review of the science, and you can't say something is safe if it doesn't rest on a foundation of vetted research. It doesn't rest on a full body of science because the FCC couldn't show it. I wanted to give you a short history of FCC limits in the United States. So after World War II, the United States began a robust research program on electromagnetic fields, initially for military applications. And in the 80s, the Environmental Protection Agency was considered one of the lead agencies on the issue of non-ionizing electromagnetic fields. And they were tasked to develop safety limits for wireless radiation because we hadn't federally developed safety limits. And why that's important is that having independent scientists, you know, or government scientists, they're not affiliated with the industry, putting together limits that are safe for people had not been done at that time. Previously, after the Cold War, they were developing microwave radiation applications for weapons and making sure that soldiers would be safe from radar. And there was actually a lot of research in Russia. There's a lot of reports by the US government on this showing that they have investigated this and documenting biological effects from wireless radiation. Then in 1996, the Environmental Protection Agency was fully defunded from studying the issue of non-ionizing radiation, and the FCC adopted limits from industry-connected groups. Many of the scientists who were part of these groups were funded by industry, I should say. Importantly, very importantly, the EPA had been tasked to set safety limits. They were poised to develop proper safety limits, and they were defunded from doing so.
What you are seeing is a slide presentation by the EPA, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, to the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. This is from March 21st, 1995. And it is a briefing by the Office of Radiation and Indoor Air of the EPA. It is about their plan to develop safety limits related to wireless. Limits they never developed because they were fully defunded. But let's take a look at this. So in their slide presentation, they have a little background about how they came up with this strategy. And they refer to this 1992 SAB report. That's the Science Advisory Board report that recommended that the EPA develop guidelines and how important it was that there were federally developed limits to ensure the public was protected, of course. They refer to a radiation conference that was done where EPA guidance was recommended as being needed because they had sufficient information about heat-related effects, but not enough information about non-thermal exposures and modulation. And they fully recognized that they needed to set limits that addressed non-thermal exposures. Here is a graphic of their strategy, phase one, phase two. Phase one was about health effects that are known, the heating effects, and those would be interim guidelines. And then they were going to do phase two on modulation with the final exposure guidelines that would be developed, and they go into detail. Phase one, they say, is based on the EPA comments to the FCC that had been done previous and combining the NCRP. There was actually a 1986 report, 1986, might I add, by NCRP about the research that existed with recommendations, and this is all based on heating as the only harm. And then ANSI and IEEE, again, heating as the only harm was what these guidelines and standards talked about. And they specifically state, if you look at the last bullet here in their presentation, phase one does not include modulation, does not include chronic exposure, does not include non-thermal effects. So let's look at that chronic exposure. That's key here. Chronic exposure means daily constant exposure because our limits are based on a handful of animal studies that looked at short-term intense exposures to animals. They got overheated, they stopped pressing a lever for food, and the scientist said, well, that's the level that is, you know, not safe, and that is the threshold that was selected. Doesn't consider impacts to a brain function, impacts to brain development, impacts to during pregnancy or to young children or nervous system impacts. I mean, the limits we have, again, are based on a small handful of animal studies that are about heat only. And that is kind of similar to, I imagine, what phase one would have been about, judging from this slide. Now, if you look at what they say about phase two, again, which were never developed, they it looks like they're inviting the NCRP to do a commentary that would take 2 years. They don't have sufficient data at this time. They would focus on developing exposure limits, convening with national experts in the field, and they would address these, what they call controversial issues, as the basis for a document on what they recommend the limits to be. That never happened, of course. Then they have a calendar that shows what the review process would be. Again, this never happened. The EPA did not develop safety limits for human exposure to wireless. We have no federally developed limits. We adopted those limits by groups which were chaired by industry-funded engineers. Industry-funded engineers developed the limits which the United States adopted.
Now, how did that happen? Well, Congress did it, and it was at a time when there was heavy lobbying by the wireless industry to Congress because they were working towards the 1996 Telecom Act. It's actually considered one of, certainly at the time, the most heavily lobbied bill of all time. It may very well still be. I haven't looked at the recent numbers. We do know that the wireless industry was extensively funding not only lobbying, but supporting our elected representatives. So in 2013, the FCC opened an inquiry on these radio frequency limits that it had set in 1996. And what that means is they asked a question. And the question was, it was actually many questions, specific to children. They said, should there be special protections for children in light of the recent research, which shows that children absorb more radiation and are more vulnerable? So they asked that question about children. They asked about long-term effects. There's actually many, many pages of questions that were asked by the FCC. Then there was what's called a docket, which was open, which is basically an online record that's been opened where people can submit. And there were over 1,000 submissions to the FCC, and thousands, each submission could have a number of documents, which could be a number of pages. So there really are tens of thousands of pages of submissions to the Federal Communications Commission with things like science showing harm at levels that are below FCC limits, harm to memory, behavioral effects tied to cell phone radiation exposure during pregnancy, impacts to learning, changes to the amount of brain cells in animals, impacts to the electrical activity in the brain from exposure. All kinds of research and science was in this record starting in 2013 when it was opened, till 2019 when it was closed. In 2019, the FCC made a decision that they would not change their 1996 limits or update them. And they were supposed to have done that upon a review of this large record, which had amassed over the last 7 years, the previous 7 years. So that is why we filed our lawsuit, because here was this whole record showing harm, this whole record showing all of the science and also recommendations by medical doctors, by scientists, by experts in the field saying that you need to rethink these limits. They're not based on the latest science. They don't protect children, pregnant women, wildlife, the environment, or people for long-term exposure. So that was an important, really the most important piece of our lawsuit. And in 2021, the court issued a decision saying favor in our favor, especially regarding the question of adequate review on the issue of children, which is what we're focused on today. The court ordered the FCC to provide a reasoned explanation, and these are quotes, a reasoned explanation for its decision to retain its testing procedures for determining whether cell phones and other portable electronic devices comply with its guidelines. Now that part one is about the way that we test wireless radiation, the way we measure it. How do we determine something's compliant or not? And that's a whole other bucket of a conversation that we'll have another time. But that has to do with the fact that phones in body contact positions can exceed FCC limits. And the FCC argued that, well, it didn't matter because their limits are just so safe that it doesn't matter if the cell phone radiation exposure exceeds limits. But the court saw through that. They actually pointed out in the final ruling the distance that the manuals have, that distance, that the testing procedures use a distance between the phone and the body phantom. So they understood that. So for example, Wi-Fi routers have a 20 centimeter distances you're supposed to keep to stay within FCC compliance, as do some laptops, as do wireless printers, as do wireless Alexas and all of these things that are in modern homes these days. The court also ordered the FCC to, part two, address the impacts of radio frequency radiation, wireless radiation on children, and look at the health implications of long-term exposure to radio frequency radiation, the ubiquity of wireless devices and other technological developments that have occurred since the commission last updated its guidelines. And that really speaks to the many submissions talking about, look, 25 years ago, you know, at most people had a cell phone, if that, and certainly children did not in 1996 have cell phones, or most children did not like they do now. In fact, I remember I never would have imagined a kid having a cell phone in 1996. I didn't have my first phone till 2002, and I used it for 20 minutes a month per the the program that I had, the payment program that I had. And the court ordered the FCC to address the impacts of radio frequency on the environment, flora, fauna, wildlife, of which the FCC didn't address at all in their decision not to update the limits. So now in the schools, kind of like what the court is saying here, we have not only Wi-Fi routers, one, two, or three in each classroom, we have dozens of wireless tablets or laptops. We will have, gosh, in every grade, third and up, everyone has a cell phone. So plus you have your 20 to 30 cell phones, plus you might have some other wireless technology in the class. Now they're testing 5G in classes in the United States. In fact, schools are the test bed. They're like the sandbox of industry where they test out, they donate their devices so kids can try them out. They see what kids like, and it's a tax write-off, and they're testing our children or putting those virtual reality things up in front of their eyes as well. So the court also noted that the recommendations by hundreds of doctors and scientists were ignored by the FCC. So here are two quotes from the final ruling. Many commenters, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, urge the commission to adopt limits that account for the use of radio frequency emitting devices by vulnerable children and pregnant women. And they're referring to a submission to the FCC by the Academy of Pediatrics, which specifically said pretty much everything that the court ruled on, actually, that children are more vulnerable and they need a review to ensure they're protected, and pregnancy as well is a very vulnerable time. They said, look, wireless devices are being used in ways totally different than they were in 1996. And that needs to be accounted for, the way we use them, as well as the amount of use. So that was noted, and the FCC didn't say anything about it when they made their decision not to update the limits. In fact, we question whether the FCC even read that submission. The court also said the record contains substantial information and material from, for example, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Council of Europe, the cities of Boston and Philadelphia, medical associations, thousands of physicians and scientists from around the world, the letter to the United Nations and to the European Union. They are referring to the EMF scientists' appeal of several hundred scientists. The Freiberger appeal by over 1,000 German physicians, and hundreds of people who are themselves or who had loved ones suffering from the alleged effects of radio frequency radiation. And what the court goes on to say is that none of this was addressed. None of it was responded to. The way I think of it is like in math class, when the teacher says, show your work. Okay, so the FCC did not show its work. They didn't show how they came up with their decision not to update the 1996 limits. And that is what the court ruling was about, is that the FCC didn't explain this. So back to what this means about children in school and the inaccurate statement, the level of radio frequency radiation in schools is safe for school children. The court said, The unanswered question remains, whether low levels of radio frequency radiation allowed by those existing limits cause negative health effects. So once again, the commission's failure to provide a reasoned or even relevant explanation of its position that radio frequency radiation below the current limits does not cause health problems unrelated to cancer renders its explanation as to the effect of radio frequency radiation on children arbitrary and capricious. And it is a fact that, according to the court, the FCC failed to show documentation that low levels are safe. Now, when it comes to the issue of cancer, what the court said is that with the issue of cancer, the FCC did cite the FDA. I did an interview with our lawyer explaining all of this.
Second, the court determined that the FCC was not arbitrary and capricious. That means it offered some reasoning when it found that exposure to radio frequency radiation at levels below the limits on radio frequency radiation had not been shown to cause cancer. This was and continues to be a hotly contested issue. There was substantial evidence in the record that radio frequency radiation within the limits set by the agency does cause cancer or is likely to cause cancer. While the court found that the FCC had not been arbitrary and capricious when it addressed this issue because it offered some reasons to support its determination, the court was not making a scientific determination about cancer and radio frequency radiation. It's important to keep that in mind. All the court was saying was that the FCC's reasoning was not arbitrary and capricious. So again, on the remand to the agency, the court did not foreclose the possibility that additional evidence might be submitted to get the FCC to rethink the issue once again.
And one of the things that we're going to do is ensure that the FDA and the FCC have all of the updated information necessary so that they can understand what scientists are telling them, which is that the NTP, the Ramazzini Institute study, along with research on oxidative stress and the human evidence confirm that wireless radiation is a proven human carcinogen. And the FDA needs to go back to the drawing board on their statement, on their opinion, which if you're following what Julian Gresser and others are doing, that opinion does not hold because the FDA did not adequately look at all of the science on this issue. It didn't review the entire FCC record. So that's like a whole bucket issue as well that we get into in our other talks. But you can't say anymore that the level of radiation in schools is safe for school children. If someone says that, then I would say, well, based on what? Where is the documentation showing safety? And what the court confirmed is that the FCC couldn't show it. It's also inaccurate to say, which is what schools are always saying to parents who raise this issue, federal health agencies have reviewed all the science and they agree that safety is assured. The court specifically noted the silence of federal health and safety agencies on the FCC record did not equal, they talked about that this silence did not mean that they agreed with the FCC or that they thought that 1996 limits were safe. And they pointed to the National Cancer Institute, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Centers for Disease Control, and the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. None of those agencies submitted to the FCC any opinion on the issue of are current 1996 wireless radiation limits safe or not. The NCI, the National Cancer Institute, and NIH actually put in two short paragraphs that said, we're glad that the FCC is doing this, but had no opinion or comment about the record or about the safety. So in fact, none of them have reviewed the current record. And that came out, of course, in the oral arguments where the judges were asking, well, did any federal agencies look at this record? Have any federal agencies done a review of all of the research? The answer is no. No U.S. health agencies have reviewed the full body of research. They have not reviewed research on long-term exposure from cell towers. In fact, there's no agency in the United States tasked to do so regarding cell towers. None have fully looked at the research on children's unique vulnerability or on health effects such as damage to the brain and reproduction. None have done that. And just a reminder about the Council of Europe that in 2011 issued Resolution 1815 recommending that children, particularly in schools and classrooms, give preference to wired internet connections, and that it be strictly regulated the use of mobile phones by school children on school premises. Of course, now we're in a situation where phones in schools have gotten completely out of hand and teachers don't even know how to handle it. And in most schools, at least of the schools where I've talked to parents and teachers, it's just a complete mess unless there is a strong policy from the top down. Kids are using cell phones in schools all the time, not just between classes, in classes, texting all the time, and classes are very much on and in use in classes, even when teachers don't want to and say they shouldn't. And we have so much research showing biological effects, brain tumors, altered brain development, damaged sperm, immune dysfunction, oxidative stress, ADHD, altered sleep, memory, DNA breaks, and recommendations to change these limits to be more protective of children because those effects have been found at such low levels. In fact, there was a recent study by environmental working group scientists recommending limits be hundreds of times lower than what they are. And this is imaging from Environmental Health Trust advisors, engineers from Brazil, who publish and model the intensity of wireless radiation absorbed into the body. Here is an example from a laptop on the lap. These are two images. One shows the way the waves are propagated in the air. And then this one shows the way the wireless radiation is absorbed into the body tissues. The colors represent the intensities into the body, starting with the lighter colors being the most intense level, going from white, yellow, orange, red, purple, blue.
I am an electrical engineer professor, and this is a simulation using microwave industry standard software used to assess exposure to wireless devices such as cell phones, tablets, and in this case, a wireless laptop at 2.45 gigahertz when the Wi-Fi of the laptop is on and the laptop is on your lap. This imaging show how the field penetrates the body. The colors represent the intensity of the field from white to yellow, orange, red, purple, and black. Now this is a simulation of the Wi-Fi electrical field in a 6-year-old child facing a tablet. We have the tablet at 150 millimeters from the head, which is at least a little less than 6 inches. We can also take a closer look at the Wi-Fi field in the brain by using different scales. We use anatomically based models of people. This means that we simulate the absorption of different parts in the body, such as the skull, regions of the brain, the bones, eyes, and dozens of other tissues. These animations are slowed down by about 5 billion times. Most people are not aware that the waves of the Wi-Fi electrical fields oscillated 2 billion times a second through our bodies. Wireless devices emit microwaves, and these images show the intensity of the fields absorbed into the human body.
This is an example of a study done by our scientific advisors from Turkey, which is on the FCC record, which was highlighted in our filings to the court, and we think are really an important area that hasn't been fully addressed, really addressed by our federal government at all. And that's the research showing damage to the brain. This is research showing how pregnant rats exposed to 60 minutes a day to wireless radiation for just 1 month had changes in the hippocampus of their brain. And when the baby rats' brains were looked at after they were born, they looked at the hippocampus and found damage to brain cells. And Dr. Suleiman Kaplan did an FCC filing, which is on record. And all you have to do is type in Suleiman Kaplan FCC, and you can see his filing to the FCC. All of this was ignored by the Federal Communications Commission. So I wanted to hit those points about the ruling because it's so important in regards to our schools where FCC limits are brought forward as proof of safety. This issue of safety is questioned by the court ruling, which shows that the FCC couldn't defend those limits. They were not defendable. So we await the next step from the court. They can do several things. They may open up a new docket, in fact, and ask for even more information, or they may not. They may simply take the record that they have and either do some sort of review themselves, which we really don't think they can do because they're not health and safety experts, but they can bring in a consultant to do it. We don't think that would be a good idea, but it has been done in the past by the FCC. They could reach out again to the Environmental Protection Agency and to the FDA to provide more information related to the issues that they raised, children's vulnerability, impacts to brain memory, impacts to reproduction, and long-term effects. And also the injuries reported of people who are developing sensitivity to wireless, headaches, skin rashes, brain fog, and so forth. So we await what the FCC will do because that next step is really important for us. We do ask everyone who's listening today to be ready to submit to the USFCC. And actually, we hope everyone is submitting to docket 19226. There's actually another docket that is on the FCC, that is open at the FCC, about frequencies that will be used in 5G and lower frequencies for wireless power transfer. And you can still submit to those dockets. And we are writing the Secretary of Education again about, now that we've had this court ruling, about the need for reductions in wireless radiation exposure by using wired, not wireless, by using corded phones, not wireless phones in classrooms, by reducing magnetic field exposures. And we are also asking that there be education for school children so they are technologically literate, so they can learn about this issue. They can know what wireless radiation is. They should know it even exists. Most people don't know it exists. And we are also going to be, we also have our letter to President Biden that we're reformatting as well. I gave a talk to an Ohio school district and parents wrote me back and said, okay, the most important thing you just did here was go over all of the resources that you have and where they are. So I wanted to do that. So the way to get to the resources on schools is to, if you click over action, you go to Wi-Fi in school. On this page, under Wi-Fi in school, under the action tab, just go down right there. I have a lot of resources. This video, by the way, is from a school in Australia where they replaced the wireless with wired connections.
Welcome back. Now, just last week, Adelaide CBD became one of the world's biggest Wi-Fi hotspots. For the tech savvy, it's a priceless convenience. But Wi-Fi has some health experts worried. They fear it's damaging our health and we won't know the full effects for generations to come. Here's Jade Robram with one Adelaide school that's taking no chances.
The book. What do these letters mean? Could they give a clue to who he is or what he was doing at the time? We decided to write.
Within 12 months I fell pregnant and miscarried at 11 weeks. I then subsequently went on and had 10 miscarriages in this home.
Are we facing the biggest health crisis of the 21st century?
Potentially, in 20, 30 years' time, we may look back and say, gee, why did we do that to our children?
Without even knowing it, we're constantly being bombarded by an invisible fog of wireless radiation that could be making us sick. So, are we being fried by Wi-Fi? Single mother Trish Garcia thinks she is. She suffers from what is being called Wi-Fi sensitivity, and now her 12-year-old daughter is showing the same symptoms.
Headaches, even if it's just a little bit, it just kind of progresses, and heartburn sometimes, and fatigue, you know, feeling really tired, and nausea if it gets really bad. And usually when I'm using things like iPads or iPods or those kinds of like touchscreen things, or even if I'm playing PlayStation for too long.
Georgie noticed her condition grew worse at school, becoming so bad that in March this year she asked her mum if she could leave. She's now being homeschooled.
I was devastated. I cried for about 3 days because I was just so happy with all my friends and, you know, all my teachers. I had a good relationship with all my teachers and I was doing so well, and I was just so upset that I couldn't keep doing that. It was terrible.
There's no doubt in my mind that Georgie's exposure to Wi-Fi and the iPads at school over, you know, a period of time has accumulated and has caused her to have these symptoms that are, you know, made her quite ill.
The exposures in a school environment are actually much higher than in any home environment. And whether or not you're using the Wi-Fi, that router is emitting microwave radiation. And so you're constantly exposed.
Dr. Magna Havas is a leading expert on electromagnetic radiation in Canada. She believes there's a great risk when it comes to Wi-Fi and children.
It's an emerging health issue because we've got evidence now that it's been linked to cancers, to reproductive problems, to electrohypersensitivity, to heart palpitations. So we're really dealing with a tsunami.
Wi-Fi is now considered a necessity in most schools and workplaces. It's revolutionised the way we work, learn and live. Even though Wi-Fi emits low-rating radiation waves, the problem is it's everywhere.
Progressive countries like France, Russia, Israel, Italy, China, Switzerland, their exposure standards are 100 times lower than what's allowed in Australia.
A former NASA scientist mapped transmission waves across Washington, D.C. The city is covered. Many of us go about our days unaffected. But those that are, like Nicole Belsma, it can be life-changing for all the wrong reasons.
To have 10 miscarriages, we're like, just what is going on?
Look, miscarriages are emotionally, physically exhausting.
Her body was being affected by radiation sensitivity.
Yes, I do believe that the AC magnetic field we were sleeping in as a result of being on the other side of the wall of the meter box had contributed to the miscarriages.
Nicole moved house and is now a happy and healthy mother of three. She's also the author of Healthy Home, Healthy Family and is campaigning to have Wi-Fi removed from schools.
There's no complicated logging, you don't need to do anything, you just simply find the SSID, click and away you go.
Last week, internet provider Internode, the state government and the city council launched a multi-million dollar initiative to make Adelaide's CBD the biggest Wi-Fi hotspot in the world.
This is the largest public network in the country, and credit to the state government, city council, for having the vision and I guess to take the city into the 21st century.
Not having technology as a focus means that our children are thinking in a much more responsible and productive way.
One place that switched off its Wi-Fi connection is Upper Sturt Primary School. Principal Barb Jones.
There's not enough evidence that Wi-Fi is completely safe at this stage. We haven't had it long enough.
It was very difficult to find a school that was Wi-Fi free.
Tony Glab, mother to Alexander and Christina, was adamant she wanted to send her son to a Wi-Fi free zone after learning the World Health Organization classified it as a potential carcinogen.
We have those lessons from history where we know that governments take often decades to respond and act in the interests of public health and safety, and that's clearly shown with asbestos and smoking and lead. So once again, this is one of these issues that potentially in 20, 30 years' time we may look back and say, gee, why did we do that to our children?
Students still have the use of computers, but they're hardwired, which means no radioactivity is emitted.
We wanted our children to understand that computers are a tool. They're not the first part of research, or they don't have to be.
It's an idea that countries like France, Russia, Italy, China and Switzerland implemented in schools, kindergartens and daycare centres years ago. But yet Australia won't do it.
The exposure standards are not geared towards children, they're geared towards the 6-foot healthy man. I don't see a 6-foot healthy man in a childcare centre, a kindergarten or in most primary schools.
Australia's Wi-Fi safety guidelines haven't been updated for more than 10 years. Since the introduction of smartphones, tablets and the rollout of wireless internet in schools.
The government declined our interview request, but previously they've admitted that it can't be 100% sure there are no long-term health effects.
And this is from a Canadian teacher union, the second video, where the teacher unions were calling to pull out the Wi-Fi because they wanted to protect not only the students, but also the teachers.
But the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation wants a moratorium on Wi-Fi in the Limestone School Board. The teacher union's president says there is a growing mountain of evidence that Wi-Fi can pose health risks. Concerns that Andrea Loken is taking to school trustees.
There are thousands of published peer-reviewed papers that are indicating adverse health effects from Wi-Fi. And we are seeing an increasing awareness around this issue worldwide.
Loken says countries like France, Israel, and Italy are all taking steps to ban Wi-Fi in schools and daycares. The World Health Organization has listed Wi-Fi in the same category as other potentially cancer-causing substances.
That's in the same category as lead, exhaust fumes, DDT.
The Elementary Teachers Federation supports calls for a Wi-Fi school ban, adding there are also teachers who suffer from electrohypersensitivity.
Symptoms are not the same in every person because it's not an easy diagnosis to get. And when you do get a diagnosis, you have to go to Toronto to get it.
Both teacher union leaders say their fight isn't with the school board. They say they want to raise awareness about the need for a Wi-Fi moratorium until further health studies are completed and lawmakers can catch up with new regulations.
We're going to the trustees because they are the only group that can really make the blanket decision for the board.
These are two great resources for sharing with other parents and teachers who are interested in this school, in this issue of schools and wireless. We also have some downloadable, printable fact sheets, which you can find right here on this page. If a cell tower is proposed at your school, these are printable sheets that show, I'll just show you an example. What's happening related to, actually, let me get this a little bit smaller. Around the world on 5G, because 5G is an issue for schools where they're putting antennas right in front of schools. And also a lot of the cell towers that we have now are going to be updated with the 5G antennas. In addition to 5G being right there in the classroom, in the devices which are in the classroom. And we also have here different resolutions from different countries related to cell towers on schools. Okay, I need to figure out. And on this document, which is black and white so that it is printable. It has information on what are different policies around the world on wireless in schools. We talk about the European resolution. And by the way, I I should have mentioned this. The European Parliament has a report on 5G talking about the issue of cancer, concluding that the research shows that it is it's no longer just a possible carcinogen, but now would be a probable or proven carcinogen based on the new research, which has been published since 2011. So you can print this out. It has a section on North America teacher unions and what they are doing, a section on PTAs and what they are doing. And this is all information that you can print out for your school. You can also choose, you know, one or two. If you're going to a PTA meeting, bring the PTA piece of paper. I have a whole section on cell towers near schools in the United States. So for example, all of these school boards don't allow cell towers near schools. Palo Alto, Los Angeles, West Lynn, Wilsonville, Oregon, the Vancouver School Board, Montgomery County, Maryland, Prince George's County, Maryland. And I should say about Montgomery County, which is where I am now, they don't allow cell towers on elementary schools. We just had something happen where now there's a cell tower, some monkey business going on with cell towers on new cell towers on high schools. But actually that had been paused for a long time. But they state that their policy is not to allow cell towers on elementary schools. And of course, the New Hampshire 5G Commission recommends a setback of over 1,600 feet for schools for cell towers. And a collaborative for high-performance schools has criteria saying no cell towers on school property if you want to keep the radiation low. So we just have a lot of details here, and it is also hyperlinked to the source so that you can get the sources for all of this. And this is the 5G and cell tower page, but in black and white that I showed you earlier. Then a section on legal and liability issues. As an example, the Portland, Oregon Public School insurance policy excludes harm from electromagnetic radiation, just like many insurance policies do, because the risk is deemed high. And you often have to buy new insurance or a different kind of insurance to protect from long-term impacts from long-term exposure. And we also have some links to the 10Ks of the wireless industry, which talks about to the shareholders, but not to the people using their devices, how there could be a financial implication from the lawsuits, which we await rulings on. There are other lawsuits related to personal injury. And so I have some links to that. And then there's information on sources of wireless in schools, from the outdoor cell tower, the cell phones, the laptops, the tablets, the virtual reality, the smartwatches on everyone's watch. And, you know, the Fitbits, the Bluetooth headphones and earbuds and the Wi-Fi network. This is how kids are exposed in the classroom. Some information on wireless radio frequency radiation that I was shocked to learn, you know, that Wi-Fi is 2.45 gigahertz, which means waves, which are, it blows my mind to imagine this, but that there is 2,450,000,000 waves per second. You know, that's a lot of waves of this energized field, which is moving through the air, which is, you know, being then absorbed into our bodies. And then best practices for safe technology in schools. These are each pages you can print out. You know, what does a safer school, a low EMF school look like? Well, how do you do it? What kind of technology do you need to have? Well, you want to have a corded phone, Ethernet plugs in all rooms, laptops connected with Ethernet, not Wi-Fi. Tablets also, they can be connected with Ethernet, not Wi-Fi. Most, not all. And actually, the schools need to purchase tablets and devices which can be connected with Ethernet. There needs to be a policy that cell phones are off in classes, hallways, and playgrounds, and educate students about airplane mode. Educate them how devices should be placed on airplane mode with Wi-Fi, Bluetooth off, and other antennas off if you need to use the phone for something. Some classes, in fact, many classes, use phones for things like taking video. You don't have to be taking video and pictures like in classes where film classes, they're using phones. You don't have to have the radiation on at the same time. You can turn all those antennas off. And it needs to be airplane mode with the antennas off, not just airplane mode, because sometimes airplane mode will leave on several antennas in many of the newer phones. Also, the headphones, keyboard, and mouse, have those be corded, not wireless. And also, there's printers, projectors, and boards, which should be corded, not wireless. And of course, no cell towers on or near schools. We also have best practices for technology with, actually, this should all be, oh, I know, I see why. It's not hyperlinked till I drop it down, but it is hyperlinked in the document if you email it out. So these recommendations here are all hyperlinked, and they all, each one of those, if you open it up, is documents with recommendations on how to reduce exposure. Then, because I know when I first learned about how do you hardwire a computer, I was like, what in the world does that mean? What is even an Ethernet? So here's just a diagram. You know, this is an Ethernet port. This is an Ethernet cord. You put it in the port. If you need to, you use an adapter. Here's an adapter for a tablet. There, of course, are adapters for laptops as well. You have the adapter in between. I also made this about a hybrid classroom because now in many classrooms, they're having some kids that are in the class and some kids that are not in the class. So you have to have technology in the class to have the kids on Zoom receiving the lecture as well. So this was just a sort of showing what that might look like, where you have the tablet, which is connected and is getting the teacher and the kids. So and here's a desk, and here's an example of what a port looks like, and here's an Ethernet, just to show what this looks like. And then this page links it has these different areas like brain, reproduction, health, and each one of these links to a study that shows harm at low levels from non-ionizing radiation. So you can both print it out and talk about it. You can also email it, and it is hyperlinked. It also talks about why children are more vulnerable and why the science is so important, and also the issue of oxidative stress, which is so important. The majority of studies on oxidative stress have found there is an effect from oxidative stress to biological systems. And then a list of some studies on, actually this one is on Wi-Fi, and this one is on radio frequency radiation, and also phones, and this one is on magnetic field, extremely low frequency fields, because of course for magnetic fields, which come from power lines or everywhere there is electricity flowing, we don't even have limits in the United States. The FCC doesn't have limits. There are no limits related to exposure to magnetic field or electric field, extremely low frequency fields. So there's some research here. And then on cell tower radiation, if you're a parent and there is cell tower going up outside of your school, there is a page on that as well. So I am at Environmental Working Group's website. And this is also another really useful study to showcase when people say, there's no problem. What are you talking about? That's not credible. This is crazy. It's conspiracy theory. Again, just you say, no, I know it's You know, I was shocked to learn all the research. And here's an example. So here's a study that I was referring to. They looked at the research on, from the National Toxicology Program, and they looked at the damage to the heart that was found in many different groups and determined that the levels should be hundreds of times less than FCC limits. So this is the page. The study is wireless radiation exposure for children should be hundreds of times lower than current federal limits. The study was published in the journal Environmental Health, and they relied on methodology developed by the Environmental Protection Agency to assess human health risks arising from toxic chemical exposures. And what they did is they applied those methods to this issue of wireless radiation. And there's also some videos here. There's two videos. This one is about the study where the scientist explains it. And the second video, which is a little more down, just so you know where it is, and we have these on our website too, is about wireless devices and things that people can do to reduce exposure. But we recommend this page on Environmental Working Group, as well as Physicians for Safe Technology, their website, as well as Dr. Moskowitz's website, Safer EMR. He has excellent compendiums on the science. He has his opinions on the court ruling and many other court rulings that have happened. And also Safe Tech Schools, which has a program related to legal liability and how schools can reduce their risk and liability through making changes in the classroom. And they have webinars. Dr. Davis presented on one of those webinars. But on our webpage on the Wi-Fi and School Toolkit, we have a section for parents with a Q&A and resources for parents. We have a section for school administrators. We have a section for teachers with resources that teachers can use. If you are listening and you want to share this in your community, if you want to have a talk in your community, please contact us. I'm glad to give a talk to parents where they can just ask me questions and I can answer them. And I can share videos from scientists talking about this issue of Wi-Fi in school, share videos of the teacher union leaders talking about this issue so people can understand that many other groups and teachers and parents have already been working on this, not just in the United States, but especially in Canada, as well as in Europe. In Cyprus, Wi-Fi was removed from the Archbishop Makarios Hospital. Sure, if you know our work, you know about the incredible work of the Children's Environmental Health Committee in Cyprus, and they have a program to reduce exposure in the country. In France, Wi-Fi is off as the default setting, unlike in the United States where it's on as the default. It's just always on all the time, whether you're using it or not, whether the little kindergartners or kids in daycare are using it or not. That Wi-Fi is on and radiating all the time, but it's not necessary. So in France, they have it off. It is off unless the teacher for a certain application decides to turn it on. Now they have a wired computer for their own purposes. And there are many school districts where it's all wired because they already put in wires. And there are schools in Italy that we document, schools around the world where they are removing the Wi-Fi, and also where there are lawsuits related to kids who've gotten sick. So we have that on our resource page. And then on that Wi-Fi in schools section, we also have other resources which you can use, briefings, links to Physicians for Safe Technology, where they talk about Wi-Fi, just everything you wanted to know about the issue of Wi-Fi in school, a really good starting point. I just gave a talk to, had a meeting with a school administrator, the superintendent. And so if you have school administration leaders who are interested, if you have the ability to have a briefing to a school district, let us know. And thank you so much for joining us. Please take a look at the other resources on our site for more information.